Eric.
Hey, Charles. It was a long time ago, man.
It's been way too long. And yes. Last time we were talking about Spec Sharp.
Yes, yeah, that's true. And before that with Bertrand.
Absolutely.
Meyer, remember that?
I do remember that. So we have another special guest today. Talk to us. Who's going on?
Yep, so we have Bart de Smet. So Bart is, you know, a young genius from Belgium. And interestingly, Bart and I share some common history. So I think that's why I want to, the first question I want to ask Bart is how is he so much interested in Link? And I think it's because he also has a professor called Raymond Boutte that probably also infiltrated his brain with functional programming ideas, Bart.
Exactly.
Can you
like
tell me about that?
The whole lambda calculus thing and the pure functional style of composing applications together was one of the things which Professor Boutte was actually great at. And so SKI combinators, all those fancy things, actually come from that camp. And when you take a look at Link, it's really like composing functions which basically do filterings and projections and all those stuff. So when I first saw C Omega, before it got into Link in some way, I actually had some deja vu effect with, you know, list comprehensions and Haskell and those things. They all share common roots. And I think that's actually where it started, yes.
Very cool.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more. It's like, you know, you do all these kind of, you know, weird things with Link, like a link to MSI, link to SharePoint. You know, is there anything that you haven't linkified yet?
Well, the things you can linkify is positive infinite, right? So there are quite some opportunities left there. I've been doing lots of link to things, but also a couple of link through things. So I think it's important to point out that link is really infinite power too. Like, you have the C-sharp VB things on the one side, but you can envision things like PowerShell. So I had a link through PowerShell, which basically takes a PowerShell pipeline and sends it into link.
Nice.
And vice versa, I've been doing link to SharePoint, MSI, LDAP, those kind of things.
So can you explain a little bit more how you do this with PowerShell? Because one of the things with link is that, you know, it uses a lot of kind of magic, you know, with type-based overloading and extension methods and so on. So whereas PowerShell is a dynamically typed language, so how does that work?
Yeah, so we have some sample, actually, which is called Dynamic Link, which originally was intended to be some API, and it became a sample in Visual Studio 2008 in the C-sharp and VB samples zip file. And so that allows you to take just a string which contains, you know, a predicate for a query, and you can basically use that as the parameter to a command list. So basically, in SharePoint, not in SharePoint, in PowerShell, you do something like get products.
So why don't we write some code on the whiteboard?
Yes. Come on,
is that okay, Charles?
Yes, no, but let's wait a second, though. I mean, let's talk about one thing before we do that. Okay. This is an expert-to-expert series, and I think people need to understand, you know, that it's Eric Meyer is leading this conversation. You're expert. But the thing is, in this case, it's kind of a domain expert in Link. So it's a little different than the original idea where you would not know much about the other domain. Fair enough. And again, Bart has an amazing, incredible blog that we're going to link to. And then one quick question I would want to ask is only, A, what do you do here at Microsoft? And B, why did you come here?
Okay. So I'm actually working on the .NET framework teams currently. So I'm designing libraries for WPF, doing some stuff there. And the way I got here actually is by means of being an MVP originally. So I was an MVP for Visual C Sharp for 4 years. Somebody actually picked up my blog entry, sent me email like, are you interested to work for Microsoft? And I said, well, let's go to an interview. So
it's really dangerous to write good blogs, you know.
Yes, that's
like
very dangerous.
Might be recruited by us.
The Empire. When the Empire comes calling, you listen.
Yep.
Cool. All right, so back to what we're doing here. Right on, Eric. Take
yes,
us away.
So the thing is, like, if you read Bart's blog, you will discover, you know, what we've kind of been talking about before, is that he's doing this incredible kind of, you know, stuff with Link. And so, as he said, one of the things he's doing is a link through PowerShell, and, you know, I really want to see some like code samples to kind of see how that works. And then, you know, from there on, we will go and have lots of other questions about link stuff. So,
good.
Cool.
Let's take five of Mark and let's get started.
Okay.
So, what happens in link through PowerShell is actually, so you get a command line in some provider, like, for example, you've mounted a drive which goes to Northwind. So That's actually provided you've been writing on top of a data context. And so the data context supports the getChildItem or dir operation, which gives you, you know, everything which is underneath that particular database. So you see a list of tables, and you can CD into, for example, products.
That, by the way, is another nice thing of PowerShell, right? That they can make everything look like, you know, look like it's the same thing.
Yeah, virtual drives, like registry, certificate store, it's all just a drive of objects, basically.
Yep.
So we go into products, and so let me just abbreviate this as NW Northwind, so products. And so when you do a dir operation here, what actually happens behind the scenes is the provider gets a call like, give me all the items under Northwind products. And so it gives you back all the entity types. So from that point on, you simply have the entity types. Now, of course, you want to filter those. One of the problems, well, it's a feature actually of PowerShell, is the fact that it pushes things through pipeline. So when you do a dir, it actually gets all the items and it feeds them into the next commandlet. So you could have something like what I call the eager where operator. So you have the where commandlet where you specify something. So that wouldn't work because it goes to the database, it gets all the items, then sends it to the where class, then to, for example, a select class, which are built in PowerShell commandlets actually. But it's a push mechanism.
Yeah, so the problem is that it will first get everything from the database and then filter kind of too late.
Yep.
So you want to push the predicate into the database.
Indeed. So what's actually happening here is it's pretty simple. I changed dir to be elder, which is lazy dir. And so it calls into the provider to get just the data context. So it just knows what table to capture. It's sort of a closure of the local state, right? It knows where to go to. Then we have, instead of where, we have lWhere, which takes this little string over here and actually translates it into an expression tree. And so the expression tree is living in system.link.expressions. And we have a dynamic link API sample that basically takes the string and compiles it into an expression tree. So I basically capture that expression tree and hook it up to the source. So this thing gives me the source. This thing tells me I'm actually calling where. And then we sort of combine the two things together, like where the left-hand side will be the source, the right-hand side will be the expression tree, which is the predicates. And then we go into select. Well, we have this whole tree, so this is now one big tree over here. We pass it into lselect, which is lazy select. We translate this into an expression tree, which becomes actually the right-hand side of the select operation, which is the projection, and the left-hand side becomes the original query. And so we sort of piece everything together. And so you can endlessly compose those things. Ultimately, you want to execute it, so you take that whole query, which actually produces something like a SQL query, which basically contains the entire expression tree. If you want to execute it, well, over here you can feed it into any eager evaluated command that basically takes the whole left-hand side and starts to take data out of it using the for each operator. So basically that makes the pipeline sort of lazy. Instead of pushing things through, it's actually pulling things from this side. So instead of pushing from here to the right, it actually pulls from this point on everything which is on the left.
Oh, that's very smart. And so one question here is, like, you know, here you use the kind of, you know, the string for the predicates. Does PowerShell have something like, you know, lambdas where you can look at the kind of, you know, the code as data for that thing that you don't need to use strings?
It could do something with script blocks. So PowerShell has filters and scripts. So basically, it could get insights into the tree. So PowerShell now has a PS parser API, which actually gives you the tree of the script block. So you could pass in a script block in here between curly braces and actually ask PowerShell to PS parse that thing, give you that thing back, and actually get some information about the types at that point. Well, you simply get the syntax. You don't get all of the semantics at that point, but you can map it back to whatever you're seeing at the input of the pipeline, basically. So that's an alternative route I'm actually considering.
Okay, it's like, just like we're doing metaprogramming here for shell scripting language. That's amazing stuff. Cool. So this is like, you know, a very kind of, you know, like say unusual implementation of Link, where, you know, you're kind of, you know, using these commandlets to kind of, you know, compose things together. And of course, if you're doing like link to SharePoint or something, now you have to take this expression tree and instead of compiling it to SQL, you have to I think in SharePoint it's called Camel.
Not
to be confused with Camel, the functional language on which F-Sharp is based. So I have seen people say Microsoft ships Camel. Well, it's a different Camel. But yeah, so how do you kind of do that? Because I know Matt Warren has written also kind of giant blogs on how to take expression trees to SQL, and that is not that simple. And you seem to be able to take expression trees and compile them to anything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what is your secret?
Oh, I'm actually working on a secret, which is a parser generator for Link. So basically you give some camera an XML specification. It would actually emit a parser for you in C#. So I'm currently rewriting Link to SharePoint and LinkTip directly to do that, to make things a little easier for people. This is actually the left-hand side of the equation, I would say. So this is what we are seeing here is the... Oops, that's kind of unhandy. So this side is actually the fan inside, I would call. So that's what goes to Link. And now we will switch gears and actually take a look at everything at the right-hand side of the two operators. So Link to X, Y,
Z. Okay, yep.
So how that actually works is I should take a look at, for example, C#. Like, we write a query in C# using Northwind, and we decompose that thing, what actually the compiler is doing, and get some insight in how it actually creates the query expressions. So assume we are in C# and we write something like var result equals from the in product. Well, let me put it over here, where p.price is larger than 100. Let's keep it simple, just do select P at the end. Actually have a blog post on why select P is required. It's just a blog post that covers that thing, and in VB you can actually omit it unless you don't have a where clause. And
I know all about that.
You have to do things how it actually works in the compiler, it's explained there. So what happens when C# sees this thing, or VB sees equivalent expression, is the following. So we start by taking the in clause from from. Of course, we could have multiple froms, and then we get into select many and those things. Let's go there right now. But so this becomes the left-hand side of the whole thing. So that's actually the input to the query, right? So products could be db.products, which is a property on data context.
Yeah, so that's the kind of thing that you're going to send the query to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's actually the target, and the target appears on the left-hand side, basically, since we will capture that and move that forward and extend it with additional query capability. So we'll add the where clause to it, the select clause to it, to build the query. So the next thing that happens is the where keyword actually becomes a where method call. And then we take this dummy over here, p, which is basically a variable which is in scope, which indicates all of the elements in products, whatever they are like. They could be a product entity type, they could be, whatever you want. So compiler literally takes that p and puts it over here, adds an arrow to it, and takes this whole thing, p price is larger than 100, as the body of this thing which is called the lambda expression. So it basically composes things together this way, and it does the same for select. So the select operator becomes select, mapping that p again onto the body over here, which is also p.
Do you get that on the screen right?
I'm trying, yes, I am. The thing is, the autofocus of this camera is freaking out a little bit when it's sort of the degree of light that's coming in through the window is varying, and then I'm shooting onto white, so there's a strange thing happening, which is actually kind of cool. But so right now what I'm doing is I'm definitely highlighting it and slowly going over it. I think your description so far has been excellently clear. So
good. Okay. So at this point, actually, the compiler is done doing everything it knows about Link. From that point on, it simply has translated this Chinese things with from and where and select and order by. And it sort of got rid of them by just putting it into a chain of method calls. And from that point on, you're sort of in another subset of C# Trio, which doesn't know about Link anymore. It just knows about how to call methods, which we had in C# 2.0. Mm-hmm. It also has been extended in C# 3.0 with extension methods. So that's actually where the secret sauce comes in, because you could have a products type, the type of this thing, could have a where clause which takes in a predicate which is compatible with this thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it could be a function that maps something of type, whatever the type P is, onto whatever the type is of the where clause.
actually have some blog entry coming up that actually says that the where clause shouldn't necessarily be Boolean valued. It can be actually anything.
Yes, yes.
So you can actually write a string over here. As long as you have a where method that basically maps B onto a string, it will simply work.
Yep. So an interesting exercise for the viewers is that using that trick, the fact that it just kind of does this literal translation, you can even define lambdas without lambdas by just kind of giving the right implementation of the sequence operators. Mm-hmm. And then so that's kind of a nice geeky thing that you can do.
Why would you want to do that?
Hey, we're geeks, right? We're programming language people, so we like to do weird things. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So we won't do weird things now, but now it actually all depends on the left-hand side here. What's products? Like, is it an IE numerable of T? Is it an IE queryable of T? Those are basically the two decision points there. And so the most specific one wins. So we have an interface called IE queryable of T, which basically inherits from or implements IE numerable of T. And so IE numerable of T is anything you can iterate over. A queryable is anything you can iterate over by sending a query to something else, like sort of divide and conquer or delegate, you know, the query capability to some data source. Mm-hmm. And so assume that products is actually a queryable, or let's first do it's just an IEnumerable, it's not an I queryable at all. Then we're in the case of link to objects. Mm-hmm. So what actually happens is we find a where operator which takes in a function mapping T onto a Boolean. And then we have a select operator, which actually maps a function from T onto R, where R is the type of the projection.
So and in this case, it's T, because it's,
yes,
just
it's
the
T
identity
because
function.
It's the identity function. That could be anything, an anonymous type, for example. So that's actually what's happening here. And the implementation of the where and the select are actually iterators. So I have this project called LinkSQO on CodePlex, which basically shows how those things are implemented. Simply like a for each over the source, and just for everything apply this function, if the Boolean returns true, then yield return the thing back to the client, basically. So those are actually sort of lazy evaluated. It's only when you start sucking things out of the result using a for each operator, then that whole state machine of, you know, chained together iterators will actually start executing.
Yeah, so that's a kind of a very important kind of, you know, remark here, because that is what makes link kind of composable. That's also why you can break one query into separate queries, and then in the second query over the result of the first query, but the intermediate result is never kind of fully built because it's all kind of lazily evaluated, just pulling enough to get the final answer.
Exactly, and that's what
and that's also what that why you did the laziness here.
Because otherwise it would push the whole sequence through it, while actually you have to take things out of the sequence, and then it starts actually turning all those wheels of the composed lambdas to get the results back.
Yeah. So this is what I always say at home, you know, you should never do the dishes eagerly. Just, you know, whenever you need to meet a fresh dish, you just kind of clean one, and that's the
lazy
evaluation.
That's a great example. I mean, that's so unrealistic, but I love it. So it's like, in other words, when you say, it's interesting, we should probably talk about this, because Haskell's famous for, you know, laziness, and you really like that. So what you're saying in this case is it's lazy because it's on demand?
Yes. So another word for lazy evaluation is demand-driven evaluation. Yes, and that is often, you know, essential to get good performance, right? Because let's go back to this example here. Suppose, like Nordwind, you know, suppose there's like a million products in there. If you wouldn't do it lazily, you would get a million products out of, you know, out of the database. Then, you know, maybe you would do some transformation here before it. So you would transfer a million products, then filter out, maybe there's two left. And then so you've done all this work for nothing. Whereas if you do it lazily, you're just pulling out just enough to kind of, you know, get there. And so you will never kind of touch all these other ones. You never will instantiate them in memory.
Excellent. But just one quick thing. Eric, clearly you don't do dishes at home, but we can move on from now.
Because I'm lazy.
Yeah, because, you know, if you need you don't ever do the dishes. You just wash the ones you need. On-demand dishwasher.
On-demand dishwasher.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right on. So what's next, Bart?
Okay. I'm actually very lazy. Like, I don't eat at home, so I don't have to do the cleaning.
That's even
dishes.
Lazier.
That's even better.
That's even better. So you can avoid all the complexity if you don't have to create, like... the most secure computer is the one which isn't plugged in, right? So it's the same degenerate case. So now assume that products actually doesn't take or isn't an IEnumerable, but it's something more. It's an IQueryable. So what actually happens then is when you take a look at the IQueryable interface, it only has 5 members. And you sort of start thinking, like, just 5 members, and I want to do where and select and all of those things. Where do those things come from? Well, actually, the trick played here is that IQueryable is sort of what I call an asymmetric interface. You know, you only have to implement 5 things, but you get lots of things in return. And the way that actually works is because when you do using system.link, basically you have some class called Queryable in scope, which is an extension class, well, a class that only contains extension members, I would call an extension class, on IQueryable of T. Mm-hmm. So it basically, when this thing is in scope, magically somewhere and some select operator appears that basically applies on that IQueryable of T. Now, there's just one little difference in the signature, and that makes a lot of difference, actually. Instead of passing in a function that maps a T onto a Boolean, it actually passes in an expression of a function that maps the T onto a Boolean. And so what that actually does on the call side of the where, it doesn't translate this lambda expression in an anonymous method, which is just IL code, but it translates it into an expression tree. So basically at the call side, you're not passing in code to the where operator, but you're passing in an expression tree that represents this entire thing. So let me give a sample, like this p.price is larger than 100 becomes something that looks like, well, together with the lambda syntax here, it becomes a lambda expression of parameter p that maps it onto a larger than operator, with the left-hand side being a property expression or a member access expression or whatever it's called, which is p.price, which simply contains some property info to get back to that thing. So basically, when you start translating those expression trees, you get all the property info, the reflection info for p-price, and you could find custom attributes. So assume p-price internally is mapped onto unit price, you can actually do that. And then the right-hand side will be a constant expression which contains value 100. And so this is actually the expression tree passed into where, and similarly for select you will have a lambda that maps p onto P in this case, which is the trivial. Mm-hmm.
And to kind of, you know, tie it back to your previous example, in here in this case, it's very convenient because the C-sharp compiler will kind of generate the expression tree for you, whereas before you would have to take that string and parse it and create the expression tree. Mm-hmm.
So basically here we're sort of taking the functionality of the C-sharp compiler and sort of letting the compiler run as a service over there, say, you know, you have the string here and do whatever you would do in...
Yes, but the nice thing here is that you get type checking and IntelliSense and everything in that predicate instead of being hidden in a string.
Yep, like if P, which is IQueryable of T, so of type T, doesn't have a price, it will blow up and it will simply say, I can't find a price property.
Yes, at compile time.
At compile time, exactly.
Cool. And the notion of compiler as a service is interesting.
Mm-hmm. It opens for lots of things, actually. And sort of the expression trees is something that sort of is already, like, making the compiler do less work. You simply say you have to translate it to the abstract syntax tree, and from that point on, the expression tree, I will take care of the rest of the translation. I don't want it to go directly to IL code. I want to go into SQL, for example. So
So the expression trees is a little bit, it's like the first glimpse of having the compiler available as a service, because I tell the compiler, you know, here's a C-sharp expression. Now give it to me as a piece of data, instead of here's the, you know, an expression, a lambda expression, and create a delegate. Mm-hmm. So it's like you can use the compiler to that it gives you its abstract syntax tree, and now you can take over and do whatever you want with it. So it's really metaprogramming, you know, in C-sharp.
Outstanding.
And VB, of course.
Exactly.
And pretty much anything, F-sharp, and anything else that runs on the CLR.
Well, this is a language feature, right? Okay. So these expression trees, the expression tree type is a .NET thing, but the fact that you can take a lambda expression and convert it into an expression tree, that's a C-sharp and VB thing.
Yep. Certainly.
And then F-sharp has something similar with quotations, so where it doesn't use the type system, but you use kind of special... symbols to kind of, you know, go there.
Very cool.
Yeah. Like a typical quiz question, just to throw something in, is like, you write something like var lambda equals p arrow p dot price is larger than 100. well, to compilers, say that's an important thing there. And it's important to realize that this thing doesn't have a type by itself. It can be two types. It can either be a function, you know, a delegate, or an expression of that function. So it's only when you ask for an expression you will get the code as data. If you don't ask for an expression, you get it as IL code. So that's basically where the own type thing actually comes from. Like, by itself, it doesn't have a type. It's because the where parameter is an expression, will turn it into an expression tree.
Interesting.
And so what's actually happening now is, well, we have done where, and we passed in an lambda expression. It became a syntax tree, or an expression tree. We did select, we got an expression tree. Now, all those operators are actually invoked on Queryable, the extension class for iQueryable, and what that thing actually does is it puts all those pieces together. So it basically creates one large tree out of those little fragmented trees.
So just like, again, what you did in your first example.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. And the kind of the amazing thing really is that this is all, until now, you have done no work, right?
I have not done
it's
anything.
Like it's either stuff that's already in the framework or in the compiler.
Exactly.
And you know, you can write these big queries and what you get is an expression tree that represents that whole query, and you haven't done anything.
Not the same thing, actually.
I mean, as a Dutch guy, I like that. It's like cheap, you know, I haven't paid
cheap,
anything.
Cheap, lazy.
And lazy. Oh, yes, it's like fantastic.
I was going to open a company, and remember, I talked to you about this in Netherlands, and one of the banks that I went to, that was kind of what they were trying to tell me when I presented the business plan with a potential partner of mine. And they were like, you know, remember, the Dutch are cheap.
Yeah.
They go out, they drink beer. They're not going to want to go drink expensive cocktails, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, it's interesting. It's not a bad thing. I mean, you're very pragmatic.
Yep.
I love Amsterdam. I love Holland. Anyway, I'm sorry for that. I'm just trying to infuse a little humanity into this incredible conversation. Continue.
We're humans, to be.
Yes, you are.
Yes,
for sure.
We're a subtype, which are the geeks.
So can I just ask one quick question? So from a generalist point of view, in essence, what we're talking about is the creation, the generation of expression trees.
Yep.
And then
yes.
I take the expression tree, and then I can meld that into specific patterns that could then run against any number of targets in the link to model.
Yes.
All right, I'm just trying to catch up.
Exactly.
I'm not as smart as you guys. So, okay.
Yep. But what I pointed out is that until now, this is all generic, right? There's nothing that is special for, you know, link to SharePoint or whatever. So everybody, if somebody out there wants to do link to, you know, whatever their data source, you know, until this point, you know, they can just use what's there. They don't have to do anything special. And that's kind of the real power and value of link. That, you know, it gives you so much out of the box.
Mm-hmm. Outstanding. Nice job, Eric. All right.
So, yeah, the Queryable puts everything together now. So you basically get one giant expression tree that captures, you know, a pointer to the source, so it knows what data connection to use, and it knows the data context, and everything which is basically captured in product. So basically, the this point, because this thing originally was an iQueryable. When applying where to it, you get a new iQueryable back. So you're sort of adding, you know, rings to the union, basically. Mm-hmm. So you're making the thing bigger every time. And so you get the big, gigantic expression tree, which contains a where node and a select node. And it's maybe interesting to write it down, because you will see that the order is sort of changing.
So maybe we should put it on that side. Yes.
Yep. Move that thing a little bit. So this entire query becomes something like, let me see. So the first thing we do is we take products. Then we call where, and we already got from the compiler, the front-end compiler, we got this entire expression tree over here. So what we will do is we'll sort of quote this thing, sort of reference to it, and we'll hook that up over here. So we have products becomes the left-hand side to where call, and the right-hand side, which is an array of arguments, becomes this entire quoted lambda expression.
So let's just call that big P or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like all that stuff is over here. Now, this is the new iQueryable I got from, you know, sort of left associative. You have products.where and you get an iQueryable back.
Yep.
And now you feed that whole thing into select. So what it does is basically it adds a select node on top of this thing, with the right-hand side being this projection identity operation I have, which maps P onto T. And so now we have an entire iQueryable, which basically contains one giant expression tree. So that's one element of the iQueryable, which the compiler actually is able to give you with some runtime help, which the runtime help is actually implemented in the where and the select methods on the queryable extension class. So you get this whole thing in an expression tree.
So the thing is, to be really precise, one of the methods on iQueryable is give me the expression.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
So that's one of the five, which is a property called expression.
Yes, a property. Yeah.
Yep. Then we have two other properties, one that goes back to a data source, which basically is a pointer to some contextual state. Then you have another one, which is the element type, which basically says, like, if I were to execute this thing, what would be the thing that appears in the for each loop? Like, what's the type that comes back in here? And in this case, of course, products is something, an entity type of product. Where doesn't change that, it's still an iQueryable of product. And select has the potential to change it, but in this case, I map P onto P, so I get an element back of type the original product. So those are the three properties, actually. And then we have, of course, like expression, iQueryable of T implements an enumerable of T, so what do you get in return? Get enumerated, right? And so that's where the magic actually happens. Now we have to do some work, actually. It's not all for free. So in the implementation of getEnumerated, what you sort of need to do is you simply take that expression tree, and easy as it can be, you simply translate this thing to some target language. So whether it's
scheduled. So now you really have to kind of, you know, turn this expression tree into a collection that you can for each over.
Exactly.
So now let's talk briefly about exactly what is the composition of an expression tree. It sounds to me like just a bunch of functions. What is the? I mean,
it's a bunch of constructors. It's just a data type. It's like a set of classes. So there's like, you know, a set of nodes that, you know, have like children. You know, for each kind of operator, there's a node, and you just build an instance of this type, and now you can, you know, do whatever you need
like
to do with it.
Parse through it.
It could point out a few of those, like select and where will be method call expressions, products will be a constant expression pointing at the product's instance which was fed in, this will be a lambda expression, the 100 in here will be a constant expression, this will be a member expression, and the p actually will be a parameter expression. So, you know, we have lots of those expression types there. I've just started the blog series actually on dynamic expression trees, where basically you have similar types but with dynamic semantics. So you have lots of those things, and basically, you simply take the API, well, not the API, the grammar of C#, and you see, you know, everything that can be expressed in an expression, well, all of those terms have a counterpart in system.link.expressions. expressions. So they are all subclasses of expression.
Yep.
So like you have a conditional term in the operator as well. All those things are there. And so when you do the getEnumerated, well, you see that giant expression tree, and you need to walk it in some way. Like, have lots of strategies there. You can use like a visitor pattern to go over the tree. And the things I've been doing were sort of brute force and grown organically. So that's the thing I'm currently doing, is like creating some generalized approach to parsing that tree based on given grammar.
So let me ask a quick question, because again, if we start talking about the notion of a compiler as a service. And so let's say, for example, I make a call, I get an expression tree back. I then have to parse the expression tree. What inside of that, are there identifiers attached to each expression that lets me know that it's a function, right? It's a constant. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. So
when you do your brute force, what kind of semantics are you using? I mean, what? Take us through a little bit your brute force approach to a big fat expression tree that you get back.
Yes. And by the way, to be really precise, Charles, you don't have to parse that expression tree, because what you get is already C# has done already the parsing for you. So what you get is an abstract syntax tree. And what you have to do is you have to compile that abstract syntax tree in another language. So you're doing your own kind of second level of compilation. And that's kind of where Bart does his brute force to kind of walk that expression tree and then generate code.
Okay, so it's an abstraction. It's an abstract syntax tree.
Yes, that represents
this
a C# expression that represents this query here.
Got it.
Well, really, the query after had been translated into, you know, method calls.
Yep, exactly.
Excellent. Thank you.
And so, just to add something else to it, this only has the capability to express expressions.
Yes.
So in the DLR, we also have statement trees, which are sort of the extension on top of that. So you have if nodes and where nodes and while nodes and those.
Yes. And that, then if you really want to go and do full metaprogramming, then you need kind of everything, right? You need statements, you need class declarations and everything. But I think this is already kind of, you know, a huge kind of start.
Yeah, the fact that you can express every query expression using simply this subset.
Yes.
Is just what we need. Perfect. So the brute force approach, well, you sort of start at the top, and basically you always have a switch statement. So this thing is just an expression. You see it as an expression. Mm-hmm. And expressions have a node type. And when you take a look at the node type, it's an enumeration of node types. And so basically you will have something which is called method call. So you will see that you're in some switch block, and the case label will be call expression. And so in the call expression, you sort of have to decide what you're seeing. Like, I'm seeing a select call, which has a method info that points to queryable dot where, or no, select in this case.
Yeah.
So queryable dot select. So then you say, well, I know this guy. I know that the semantics of queryable dot select are to project something. What am I going to project? Well, the left-hand side, and I don't care about that translation yet. I will do that recursively. So I will ask this thing, please translate me something that represents the entire semantics on the left-hand side. And then I will know how to take that translation, which might be a long string, it might be an XML document. And then you simply append the select operator to it, translating the right-hand side. So you take responsibility for the right-hand side because, you know, select takes in a projection, and I know how it maps to the target language, like onto a select operation in SQL. And then the other side, well, you're basically asking to recursively compile. And so in here we'll see, again, we'll be in the same switch block because we have the same entry point. We're switching on the type, we see it's a method call expression. We recognize some queryable.where. We say, hey, we know the semantics. Left-hand side, please translate whatever it takes. Right-hand side, I'm going to emit something which represents this Boolean predicate. And so always recursively, you sort of dig into that. And so, for example, this might become a call to parse predicate passing in that original lambda. And then you're seeing something like P price larger than 100. Well, that might become literally price larger than 100. It might be price dash LT 100, like PowerShell syntax kind of things. It might be an XML node which is called LT in SharePoint. So you sort of compile that into some XML fragment or an XML node actually, and you hook it up to the rest. And so ultimately you get one gigantic XML document in this case, which you can send to SharePoint, for example.
Excellent.
Of course, on the way you have to implement some tricks, like SharePoint doesn't have a Boolean not operator. I wasn't able to find it. So you have to do tricks like applying the Morgan's rule, which is something from formal logic, in order to translate those things. And that's the funny thing about it, of course, like you have to apply tricks.
But really, this I wouldn't call this brute force. You're just doing kind of, you know, recursive compositional, like you write any compiler by kind of, you know, walking the syntax tree and do it in a recursive way.
It's just that you can put some patterns on top of it, like the expression visitor. It's simply that big switch loop, that switch statement, simply calling into virtual methods that you can override. And then you take the responsibility to do the translation inside that particular override.
Yes, but now you're going into design patterns for doing this kind of, you know, visiting this tree in a certain way and kind of taking away the boilerplate code for that. Yes, and again, if you look at Matt Warren's blog, he also has like, you know, like a visitor for
this. Yes, there's some MSDN somewhere. So
yes, exactly.
Cool. So what are some of the interesting things you're seeing being done besides, of course, the work? Has anyone done link to NTFS?
Link to TFS? Link to objects can do that. Like. Yeah. NTFS doesn't really have, for example, some query language you can target. So that's the first thing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was WinFS.
About,
like, okay.
Is there something? Yeah. Oh, that was WinFS.
Just playing with you. Just kidding.
Yes, but this is this was a good question, Charles.
Maybe
you didn't even realize that. But the thing is, like, you know, if you can use this like iQueryable only if the thing you're querying has itself a query language that you can push to it. Like, for example, in this case with Northwind, you know, there's a SQL database, so I can take SQL and push it through it. Mm-hmm. Or with SharePoint, there's a query language, so I can take, you know, the C# thing and push it to the other world. if the source doesn't have a query language, then your only choice is to kind of suck everything in memory and use, you know, link to objects or, you know, basically
it's like
to do
what PowerShell normally does. Like,
yes,
it's exactly the opposite thing, like pushing things through.
Yeah. So really, you know, the advice should be for people that have a data source is they should have, you know, some query language.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, it would be easy if they just, you know, just
think in the expression.
Exactly. They don't have to design any kind of wacky query language. Yep. Just think expression trees, and our life would be even easier.
But so, by the fact that the target construct has to have some sort of query language, sort of, you know, disagrees with your original notion of the infinite capabilities of this technology. So,
he's gonna nasty questions, huh?
Well, because I think I know a fact. There are people working on things that, when you think about link to X, the things that X represents, there really isn't a notion of a query language for X yet. They're still doing it. We can't talk about it right now because they're not here, so it's inappropriate. So I just wanted to bring that up. That's an interesting point. So IEnumerable and IQueryable on both ends of the spectrum need to be present, is what you're saying.
Actually, one of the two.
One of the two.
Present, right? Yeah. So if you have an IQueryable, you know, it's an interface. You can have infinite number of implementations of it if you have infinite.
It makes sense.
Drives,
I mean,
right?
Yeah. Okay. And then there's another thing. Like if you look at, for example, link to XML, there is no kind of IQueryable or anything. But what often happens when people talk about link to X, where they don't have this expression trees, is that they have a special API that makes it link friendly. That is kind of, you know, that exposes lots of things as IEnumerable. Because then you can just use normal link to objects to query that. So that's the kind of trick that we use with link to XML, is the normal XML DOM doesn't expose, you know, its results of its method calls as IEnumerables. So if you link enable something, even if it doesn't have a query language, so I still would say that there's an infinite possibility, because you can take some ugly API and now say, let's expose it such that it exposes IEnumerables, and then you can use the nice query syntax.
So link to NTFS is not insane?
That's not insane.
Nope.
Okay.
Yes.
Anyway.
Like you could do it with file info or directory info dot get directories. Like, you know, that's your source of elements inside a certain node of the tree there. So.
And then, of course, like programming against a transactional file system could be sort of interesting as well.
And you could put it all in a transaction, yes.
Okay, cool. I'll stop randomizing this.
No, this is good. So now I would like to kind of, you know, go back to a remark that you made earlier where you said, you know, this where thing doesn't even have to return a Boolean.
Yep.
Right? And so in some sense, you can, this guy here, product, doesn't have to be iQueryable or IEnumerable.
Yep, exactly.
It can be anything.
Yep.
As long as it has a where and a select, and this doesn't even have to return a Boolean. It just, you know,
a function of two things.
Exactly.
Yep.
In that sense, there is an infinite number of things you can do, because, you know, as long as your type exposes these methods of the right signature, you can query over it.
Yep.
So now my question is, have you done anything like that where you kind of, you know, don't use IEnumerable or IQueryable, but you say, oh, I have, like, you know, I've implemented these sequence operators on some...
One of my presentations, I have such a thing, which is more like quiz number 6 in the presentation, which is linked to The Simpsons.
Okay, well,
linked to The Simpsons. Explain. Explain.
Should we wipe out the board?
I think so. That's captured on film. These are developers we're talking to. They get it.
Uh-huh. Just get rid of something. So what I'm doing there is basically just to show
Let's kind of wipe out everything. Otherwise, we'll kind of, you know, override that later.
So basically what I'm doing there is something, like, I have to come up with the exact API because it's a nonsense API, but it simply shows what the query expressions can do. So I'm going to do something like from X in new Homer, where X dot has skateboard, select X dot sister, and on the whole thing I'm calling dot father. And there are actually implementations of those objects that are flowing here that will support this whole thing. It's just that the compiler likes to see certain patterns being translatable. It's nothing more than that. So assume that Homer actually has a function called where. So let's declare Homer, class Homer.
So, and this is where the really, really awesome power of link is, right? That it doesn't require IEnumerable or iQueryable. If you just want to kind of, you know, use what's there, that's what you use, but it's completely extensible. Like, you know, you can take your own class and you implement these operators and it still will work.
Beautiful.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. So I'm writing the where operator here. Like, where takes in a function that maps Bart onto Boolean. So it actually happens when you're writing this thing from x and u home where x dot, x in this context is bound to this parameter. So Visual Studio will actually show you the IntelliSense for Bart. It will say, there's a skateboard. Now assume that this thing actually returns, like, for example, March.
Yep.
What's happening is from this point on, this whole expression so far is fed into a select call March.
Yep.
So you have a class March. And I'm not even using generics here, like, you know, iQueryable of t and IEnumerable of t have always the same semantic for that x. It's actually the element type from the original source. In this case, that x will magically have a different type here.
Yes. So this is so awesome, right? And let's point that out really. Uh-huh. You think that x, if you look at this, that x has type Homer.
Yep.
But it's not true at all, because of this thing, it has type Bart, and then you think that X here has type, you know, well, still Homer, but now it's even has that. It's,
yep, exactly.
It's awesome.
So, that's why some select statements, right? So, select could actually not take in, you know, a Homer or a Bart, it could actually take in a Lisa and return a Maggie. So what happens in this case is actually the compiler will see, well, that's not wrong, that's a function.
Yep.
Select function that maps Lisa onto Maggie. So when you do select x dot, x now over here is bound to Lisa. Lisa has a property sister, and sister returns an instance of type Maggie. Compiler is happy because this thing can be translated into a lambda expression that actually has this contact. So it's just fine. And this thing returns, for example, a Homer. And then, given this thing, the question, of course, is to the people in the room, like, what's the type of this entire expression, including dot father? Lots of people say, well, it should be Homer, because that's the only one in the family. But actually, the father of Homer is Abraham Simpson. So basically, you see that this is a nonsense query, basically, but it's perfectly translatable.
Yep.
And so that indicates that as soon as you have an object model that has a where and a select, it will simply work.
Yep.
If you have an order by a then by, it will simply work. It also means that if you go to an iQueryable, you get all the operations. And say you don't support take and group by and order by and those things, normally the compiler would be happy to translate it because iQueryable has extension methods that have all of those operations available. So if you want the compiler actually to bail out early, like if you're doing order by after this select thing, well, you can basically implement the query pattern yourself. And then, actually, it doesn't find an order by method overload that's suitable to be used in this case. It says, I can't compile the order by call here.
Yep. So you get an error earlier. Otherwise, you would get it at runtime when you're trying to kind of, you know, translate
expression.
That expression.
Yep.
This is beautiful.
Yep.
Amazing.
But again, it's like, you know, so it's like...
And that's also something to the infinity.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Because you can have any blend here. You can have a where which takes in an expression of a function, a select that takes in not an expression, but just a function.
Yes, and you can mix and match everything.
You can mix and match everything.
Yep. Yep. And so this is the real power of link. It's like it comes with, you know, like the IEnumerable, like, you know, for in memory everything done. Mm-hmm. If you use iQueryable, you know, the extension methods give you everything to build the expression trees. Or you can do it yourself.
Yep.
And again, the only thing you have to do is to kind of give types that have the sequence operators, and then, you know, C sharp or VB will just compile it into there and bind to them.
Yep.
And then off you go.
Beautiful. It's an amazing technology. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, you want to give us a little conclusion?
Yeah, so we've learned a lot. Can I ask one last question?
You can ask as many questions as you want.
So what is the kind of, you know, what is your next, you know, thing that you're going to Linkify?
Okay, I'm doing two things actually at this point. So I'm not Linkifying anything new at this point. I'm sort of making the translation of the expression trees easier. So basically there are lots of tricks in there. Like, for example, the number of string compares. I have a blog post on that one as well. Like, the number of ways people can do string compare that ends up in the expression tree is stunning. Like, you could do left string dot equals right string. You could do equals equals, the operator. You could do string dot equals, passing in the two things. DB compiles it to a compare string because it has some case-insensitive semantics and relative order of strings. So basically normalizing that expression tree and sort of telling the implementer of a link to X thing, this is a string equality compare, instead of having him to go to, you know, all the different flavors that a string compare can look like. That's something which I'm doing there. So.
Okay, so what you're really doing is like a source-to-source transformation of these expression trees that simplifies it and normalizes and removes. Maybe if you see a select of something, identity, you can remove that.
Or like p.productName.toString.toString.toString.equals.
Yes.
You know, all those two strings are just... They won't change the semantics of P.dot's product name.
Like, yes.
Of course, people won't try to string an infinite number of times, but those are things which are sort of getting reduced in there.
Okay.
You could have sort of mathematical expressions that you can move things to the other side and simplify things.
Okay.
So that's one thing.
Yeah.
The other thing is more like the other side, the fan in of Link, like more true technologies. Like you have Link through PowerShell, but you know, you could serialize expression trees and send them to some server to decompose them over there. And that's yet another side. Like, you could envision link to WCF, link to MSNQ and those kind of things, like where you send over the expression tree in some shape and let it execute remotely to get the results back.
Yes.
So that's yet another thing you can sort of think of there.
Interesting. Could be interesting to try that with Volta, right?
Yes. That's one thing that we have been thinking about. Is like, instead of if you... Like often when you're doing remote method invocation, you want to do that chunky. You want to limit the amount of calls across the network.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of making like one call, you can send an expression tree that encodes, you know, a batch of calls, send it across to the server, execute it there, and get back the results. So that's definitely something that we have been kind of, you know, thinking about.
That's really interesting. So on the server side, so if you basically send this expression tree to the server, inside of that it starts executing. And then some executions might rely on the result of a previous execution. But you can have all this stuff happening without having to come back down to the client. You say, server gives me 42 back, then I send another thing back to the server with that information, et cetera.
Yes. And
very interesting.
Yes, and the reason that we have not really actually implemented that is because for those things you want to have statement trees.
Exactly.
Right? Because I want to kind of get a full statement, you know, like a whole program block that I want to send across.
Absolutely.
And if you now have to encode it, you can encode it using, you know, like select manys, but it becomes kind of, you know, rather tedious. So, but
Cool.
So it's just, we've just seen the surface, I think, of what's possible.
It's like, you know, you do a cross join between two databases that don't know of each other. You can send the whole query expression to some intermediate server, which is closer to the two data sources, join the things there, and get only the limited results back, instead of the client actually pulling down sources from two directions.
Mm.
So it's like making the query travel a longer way to the source of the data is one of the things you can envision there as well.
It's very, very interesting.
Yep.
Very cool. We got to get more people reading Bart's blog.
Oh, sure. Yes, definitely.
I'm sure he has plenty of people reading it, but we need more people to read your blog. So
really good hit numbers.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, but now when we add all the kind of Channel 9... viewers, you know, maybe your server will get, you know.
The goal is to take his server down.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
it's not just Channel 9.
It's on the edge currently, so.
Cool.
Good luck.
Excellent.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Bart.
Yep.
This is really, really cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, you know, keep on, you know, hacking.
Yep, so. Certainly.
Good.
Perfect. So, Eric, thank you for yet another excellent Expert to Expert, co-conducted by Eric, the great Eric Meyer. What are you up to these days, anyway?
Well,
you're back to your tie-dyes, I noticed.
Oh, yes, back to my tie-dyes. I mean, people were complaining, you know, what are you kind of wearing, ties and so on. So I went back to my tie-dyes.
Cool.
So I'm working hard on the kind of, you know, next CTP of Volta. So, you know, that we're keeping really, really busy.
I'm sure.
So sometime, you know, Watch for that.
Okay. We will.
All right.
And we'll keep watching your blog, sir.
Okay.
Amazing stuff. Thank you for the great explanations today.
No problem at all.
Really learned a lot.
Enjoy.
Cheers.